Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Two Out the First. It is March 27th, 2023. I am Ryan Ballingy. It's good to have you with us. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope you enjoyed the golf. We are presented by our friends at French Lick Resort in French Lick, Indiana. We have some exciting announcements to make throughout the course of the week, but we do have one we're going to make today, and that's in association with our friends in Ireland. This show is going on the road. We are going to Ireland at the end of August, going into the first week of September. Myself and my good buddy Brendan Sweeney from the French Lick Resort, we are going to be over in Ireland. We're going to take a tour of the country. We're going to play some golf. We're going to culminate in coverage of the Irish Open, which will be at the K Club this year. Very, very excited about all of this. We'll give you all the details as we get more of the itinerary that's being all worked out right now. But I'm so excited to go back. I have not been to Ireland since my wife and I, just before my wife and I decided to start having children in 2012. So it's been a while, and on that trip, it was cold in February when we went around Super Bowl weekend. We didn't play any golf. We just got to experience the amazing Irish people. Everything Ireland was wonderful. So can't wait to go back with the sticks this time, play some awesome golf, drink some Guinness, a little bit of Hart, maybe a little bit of Murphy's, depending on who you are. Very, very excited about that. So we'll have a little countdown clock somewhere in one of these corners if you're watching on video, but we'll talk about that more as the weeks go by and we get ready for that at the end of August. Today, we got two stories to talk about, and really none of them are LIV-related, so if you're not interested in LIV, this is a great LIV-free show for you. And then we have to talk about one tournament that's going away, and the WGC match play. We'll say RIP to the match play, and RIP to the WGCs. And then we'll talk a little bit about some of the other tournament action. We'll talk about Corrales Punta Cana. We'll talk about the LPGAs, finish at the Drive-On Championship. And then we are in smooth sailing mode to the Masters. We have 1 week to go. So excited about it. I'm sure you are too. It's just, there's so much coming up this week. It's great. So let's start with the WGC Dell Technologies match play. First of all, if you do not know, the WGCs as we know them are going away. They are gone. They're done and dusted after this week. Commissioner Jay Monahan talked about this, was asked about this to the players, if this would be the last effective WGC that they'd be going away. And he said, yeah, pretty much, because they don't have a sponsor now. They don't have a host. Austin Country Club was a great host for this tournament. They wanted more money from the tour. Dell wanted to have a presenting sponsor along with them if they were going to come back, and they wanted Intel to come in. And obviously, these discussions were happening before pretty much every tech firm you've ever heard of started laying off people. And the PGA Tour said, no, we don't want two sponsors. So they walked away. So there was no host. There was no sponsor. That's the end. And without any other WGC event to put on, because the HSBC Champions, which is the one that's played in China, is probably never going to be played again until the contract runs out. And given the Chinese government doesn't want to play pro golf tournaments in China right now, there's just no... I mean, there's the Hong Kong Championship, the World City Championship was played on the Asian Tour, but you know, Hong Kong's got its weird status. So this is it. And it went out with a bang. I mean, this was probably one of the better WGC match plays that we had since it started in the 90s. And that was when it was the Anderson Consulting match play, and then the WGCs came along and codified it as a WGC. And I mean, you had a really nice 25-year run, almost 30-year run for this tournament. And it became more interesting over time, I think, because even though you got the occasional amazing upset in the round of 64 or 32, bringing in the round-robin play over the last, what, eight, nine years was really helpful to the tournament, because you knew Wednesday, Thursday, Friday you were going to get your top players. You were going to see them for 3 days. Hopefully, you were going to see them into the weekend. You got them for at least 3/5 of the tournament, so you were going to have them for 60% of it. And this time around, you got the total opposite, I felt like, of every single version of this tournament you've ever had, where you had top 17 players in the world in the Final Four. That all of them. That does not typically work out this way. Usually you get somebody in like the 20s, 40s, 50s, and the matchups in the Final Four are a little bit lopsided or strange. We did not have that this year. I think they were the best semifinal matches we've ever had in this tournament, and they both want extra holes. Both the guys you wanted to win, probably, unless you were Sam Burns and Cameron Young's friends and family, did not work out because Cameron Young dispatched of Rory McIlroy in 19 holes, and Sam Burns made a 25-27-footer look like that went in on the lip on the 21st hole of his match with Scottie Scheffler to get rid of the defending champion, the guy who's been in the final, won, and got to the semifinals in the last 3 years of this tournament. And unfortunately for him, this tournament won't be around next year, at least in this fashion. And then McIlroy, who it seems like he's figuring things out, went to a new putter, went to a blade-style putter, went away from the mallet style. And we've talked about this a little bit on Twitter. There is just some kind of magic that happens when you go to a new putter. Now, you don't know how long the magic lasts, and it could be a day, it could be a week, it could be a month. But it feels like when capable putters make a change, capable players, maybe they're not good putters, otherwise they keep the same putter. But when they make a change, it seems like it works out for them for a week or two or three. So maybe McIlroy was thinking, all right, if I put this into play this week, and then I'm not playing the Texas Open next week, maybe I'll still have enough magic for the Masters and he can complete the career Grand Slam. Not sure that's exactly the logic he was thinking about. Probably wasn't. But every golfer has that in the back of their mind, that if they change putters, everything's going to fix itself. And McIlroy putted very well. I thought he looked really good throughout the course of the week. He had a drive of 375 yards on a par 4 to 3 feet. That was one of the greatest drives I've ever seen in the history of the PGA Tour. Still think Dustin Johnson's Acapulco was better just because it went a little bit closer and it was over 400 yards. But nevertheless, an incredible drive given the situation. The golf was really good. Unfortunately, the final was not. Either Cameron Young was tired or just didn't have it. And Sam Burns did. 1-6-5. It wasn't even close. The good news was the consolation match wasn't over yet. So you still had McIlroy and Scheffler, which was an interesting encounter unto itself. What a 2-1 finish there. And McIlroy gets the job done, finishes in third place. I don't think they highlighted enough, and maybe it's because this thing was just going away, that the match between Burns and Young was for $1.3 million. I mean, that's a lot of money. $2.2 million to second and $3.5 million to first. A $1.3 million anything is worth noting, especially if it's relatively friendly competition like match play. That was wild to me. And I don't think anyone really seemed to notice or care. Maybe because all of the money going around these days with the designated tournaments, but it was wow. So now you've got that going away. You've got a gap in the schedule because you're still going to have the Florida swing. That's not going anywhere. You're still going to have Masters and Postmasters because you're still going to have the RBC Heritage, and it seems like that has the potential to become one of those permanent designated events, but we shall see. And then you've got to have a gap there. You've got to have a tournament that leads into the Valero Texas Open and then leads into the Masters. So what do you put there? And I don't think there's an answer to that yet. I haven't seen that or heard about that from sources one way or the other. But I think the most likely scenario is that you're going to have the Houston Open come into this spot and come back to where it once was. And it's going to kind of be in a no man's land, because you're going to have some players that want to play before the Masters, from the Players to the Masters. And you're going to have three options. You're going to have Valspar, whatever fits in here, and the Valero Texas Open. And I think the PGA Tour doesn't want to have a tournament with a three-week, or a schedule with a three-week gap of tournaments where there aren't a ton of superstars playing. Because then you take all that players' momentum and just flush it down the toilet, leading into the Masters. And the Masters wants hype and talk and momentum. So they're going to, I assume, try to find a way to make whatever fits in here a substantial tournament, because players who are typically contenders to win the Masters don't like playing the week before a major. Dustin Johnson used to be a noted exception sometimes, especially for Memphis when it was the head of the U.S. Open. But most good players want something 2 or 3 weeks out, and they probably want the week off in many cases after the players. So this would be actually probably be a pretty well attended tournament if two things happen. One, the venue doesn't stink. And two, the purse is pretty good. And I think the PGA Tour is probably trying to look to the Houston Open and Jim Crane, who owns the Astros, and say, hey, if you can put up designated money, we can get you an incredible field. If you put up slightly more than you're doing now, let's call it 11, 12 million, I still think you would get a very good field, because that would be a place at Memorial Park that you could prepare for a major championship. It has major championship length. It has some major championship facets to it, even though it's a public course, although it's been redone, obviously, in recent memory. And you could then use that as kind of, all right, this is our launching pad tournament to the Masters. And Valero is what it is. They know what they are. They're going to get 8 or 9 top 50 players, and we move on with life. So we shall see what happens there. I think the only other option that could fit in is you take one of those big money, limited field events from the fall, which is either the Zozo Championship, which I think they want to keep playing in Japan, or the CJ Cup, which has obviously found a home in the United States and is just moving around at this point. It's left South Korea. Who knows if it's going to get back there? And they just say to the CJ people, hey, we will have this $12 million or whatever number they wind up coming to tournament, and that'll be a limited field affair. You'll get great players, and we'll just have it then. That's also an option, and maybe you move it to somewhere in the Southeast. Maybe you move it into, I don't know, you can come up with all kinds of different venues, but they'll come up with something there if they come up with the CJ Cup. So I think those are your two choices for the future of this, but there still needs to be match play on the schedule. It needs to stick around in some fashion. Again, we won't have it next year probably, but if you could have a 32-person tournament where you had the top 24 players in the world automatically get in, maybe the top 8 in FedEx Cup points as of a cutoff date get in too, then you'd be guaranteed the best players in the world, and you would also get the hottest players in the world. So maybe there's a way of doing that where you can make it really interesting, put a whole lot of money behind it. There you go. It's just a shame that it feels like the whole week I saw people talking about, why is this thing going away? And it's a business transaction. Not because people don't like the tournament. It's a business transaction. And the ratings seem to be up for it this year as well, just compared to last year at least. So I think there is genuine interest in this. And I hope it does manage to come back in some fashion. All right, let's get into our second topic, which really isn't a story because, frankly, we didn't have a whole lot of headline stuff this past week. Stuff that would rise to the level of scuttlebutt or people trash talking. There just wasn't a whole lot of that. It was a pretty quiet week in terms of that, it felt like. But we had a loaded week this past weekend, and we have a loaded week this week, even though there is no DP World Tour event. We do have a bunch of other stuff coming up this week, and I think it starts and ends with the Augusta National Women's Amateur. It's going to be played this week. You have the Thursday and Friday rounds, and then you've got a Saturday practice round, and then you wrap everything up over the weekend at Augusta National Golf Club. So the first two rounds, 72 players, cut down, what, top 30 for the and ties for the final round at Augusta National. There's a practice day in the middle at Augusta National, so every player in the field at least gets a chance to play Augusta National, which, hey, that's a nice touch. But the first two rounds are at Champions Retreat, which is 20, 25 minutes away, depending on traffic, from Augusta National in Evans, Georgia. Really a very nice place. Very nice place to stay and be a member. Talked to some folks, actually was down in Aiken, South Carolina this past weekend, joined a club called Old Barnwell, and met some folks. Augusta's very close by from the Augusta area that were members of Champions or just in town, and really talked very nicely about the place. So they've got that this week. I would personally like to see the tournament have more rounds at Augusta National. Maybe it's one round at a Champions Retreat and the rest is at Augusta National, and you just make it a straight 3-day affair. I understand Augusta National's obviously got something very important coming right afterward, and I don't mean the drive, chip, and putt, which is lovely. Can't wait for that on Sunday. It'll be very, very nice. But I think that the reality is you got to have a little bit more involvement with Augusta National for the amateur. And I don't know how you work that out, but I would like to see that. And I think it would be better for the tournament. But nevertheless, still really cool that they've created this, that it's created some really interesting champions. They've had some good storylines the first several years of this event. So that's very, very exciting. Final rounds on NBC, first two rounds on Golf Channel. And then you've got, obviously, we've got the Valero Texas Open. And then we've got an event in Chile on the Corn Ferry Tour after an event in Savannah. It's a weird schedule this year. I don't know how it worked out this way, but you've got that going on. And obviously not a lot of Corn Ferry Tour guys are ever considering playing the Masters. So that's not really a big issue, but travel-wise, very strange to have that this way right now on the Corn Ferry Tour. And then there's no event on the DP World Tour this week. They had a nice little two-week run through the South Africa Sunshine Tour, coordinated events, co-sanctioned events, and they take that week off, prepare for the Masters, have the Masters, and then they'll have tournaments again. So effectively a two-week break for the DP World Tour because they're not going to host anything. They'll just co-sanction the Masters and go from there. We do have a live event this week. I said there would be no live stories, but there is a live event this week. It is Live Golf Orlando, even though it's not in Orlando. Orange County National Golf Club has 36 holes. They're playing from when they're playing the Crooked Cat. So the Crook, I just was there a few weeks ago on a family golf trip, and they were setting up for the tournament. And Orange County National is a nice facility. It's huge. The driving range, they use it for the PGA merchandise show every year. It's like 350 yards to the center and 360 degrees. So it's enormous. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's beautiful. So they'll have plenty of room for Bryson if he wants to try to smash it. And they will actually have the other course open at the same time. So they're not totally giving up the place, which I do find kind of interesting because sometimes that like the LPGA events that happens at like Tiburon Golf Club where they have the CME Group Tour Championship, they have the other course that's open and you can play it, which is, I think, kind of strange. But like at a PGA Tour event, they're like, no, we're not doing that. You either have the event and nothing else or you don't have us. And that seems to kind of often work out in their favor, right? And that doesn't happen to like the U.S. Open if there's, you know, Marion isn't like, hey, we're going to have, even though our courses are, what, 4 miles apart, 3 miles apart, we're not going to have two open court, you know, have an open course and a U.S. Open course. They use that course for warming up and transporting players and all kinds of stuff. So this is kind of a strange scenario, but they are going to be playing in the Orlando area. This is their warm-up tournament. I got to tell you, it's not a great warm-up for the Masters. And I don't know if there are many good analogs. I mean, at least back in the day, the Houston Open used to try to set up Golf Club of Houston sort of like Augusta National, where you'd have somewhat similar conditions, somewhat similar green speeds. And that was kind of interesting, and that was always a talking point. It's really hard to kind of recreate Augusta National, particularly in Orlando, which, even though just outside of Orlando, and there is some land movement, it's not quite as dramatic as you would see, obviously, at the Masters tournament. And the golf course just, frankly, isn't that hard. I mean, it's also not totally easy, but these guys are going to tear it up in three rounds. I would think 15 to 18 under could win this tournament, depending on how they chose to set it up. And if the wind blows, it can get windy out that part of Central Florida. But it just doesn't feel like there's much of a reason to have it here other than that they needed a tournament to lead into the Masters because if they didn't have one, their players would get upset that they didn't have some kind of tournament rep other than what they did in the first two events leading into the Masters. So they're going to play. They did send out their press release about this, and the tickets are $39. If you're under 12, it's free. Obviously, you're not getting there by yourself, but it is free if you're under 12. So they're trying very hard to make this a significant crowd event to make it that affordable. I'm sure you could probably get free tickets if you were interested anywhere. But again, they didn't even put out a number around the total viewership for the second tournament. And they did for the first one. And they said 3.2 million people watched over the course of the 3 days. They didn't even, at least I didn't see, I don't want to hold myself to that, but I did not see a number come out, a final number. Admittedly, was traveling some of last week. But the number wasn't going to be higher because the NCAA tournament was on, fewer people watched on TV, so you just kind of knew there were going to be fewer people watching. They didn't put out that number. So we're going to have to see what it looks like this week. It seems like a couple someones have the sources on the numbers there for LIV, and we'll find out about all of that. But you're still going to have Augusta National Women's Amateur on TV, on network TV, over the weekend. And Drive, Chip, and Putt attracts quite a sizable number of people who like to watch kids try to take on Augusta National way better than they probably ever would if they were allowed to drive, chip, and putt there. Which, by the way, I think there should be an adult drive, chip, and putt. I don't know what the answer to that is, but I think there should be an adult drive, chip, and putt. I think it'd be really fun. I think it'd be a way to get more people into the game. Top Golf could do it. I'm sure they would love to do something like that. I mean, they have Top Golf leagues and stuff like that. If you could make some kind of connection between what you do at a Top Golf and being able to go try it out in incredible, and it doesn't have to be Augusta National. They can do it at Pebble Beach. Whatever. I don't care. Do it at Pine Valley. Whoever's willing to sign up for it, put it on TV and show random schmucks like me drive, chip, and putt. And you could have divisions, not by age, but by handicap. Like, here's Jim Smith. He's a 32, plays out of Northwest Golf Course in Montgomery County, Maryland, a beautiful Muni. And here he is trying to chip or hit a sand shot out of the Devil's A-hole bunker at Pine Valley. Like, that's good TV. I don't care. That's good TV. And you could do it by, like I said, handicap range, maybe 54 down to 36. You know, have a really wide range there. And then kind of get a little bit more refined until you get down to, like, scratch. I think it would be really fun. But that's just me. That's just the person in me that missed the window on drive, chip, and putt and really wishes there would be a way to make good for it. So you got all that this week. Plenty to look forward to. We had David Skins win on the Korn Ferry Tour in that event in Savannah, Georgia. I mentioned the Club Car Championship. He's an Englishman who went to the PGA Tour, was very emotional about it, didn't do very well, went back to the Korn Ferry Tour, now puts himself in a position to get back to the PGA Tour because the top 30 in points get there, which means he's just got to have a couple of other okay finishes to be able to get back to the PGA Tour. Looks like he's pretty much in position to do that, because if you just win tournaments, you have a really good chance on the Korn Ferry Tour of getting to the next level. And then you had David Toms win for the second time in three starts on the PGA Tour Champions, which it's cool to see someone kind of step out from that group from last year where you had five guys that were really much pretty much winning everything. It'd be interesting to see a different group this year. Steve Alker finished second. I think it's probably been an emotional time for him. His caddy passed away from terminal cancer and just going through a lot, so it was really cool to see him finish in second place. Celine Boutier also wins on the LPGA Tour. She won in a playoff for the LPGA Drive One Championship. It was interesting. Grant Boone, who does play-by-play for Golf Channel, pointed this out, but she missed an 8-foot putt in the first Drive One Championship, which was at Inverness Club. This tournament was originally set up as a way to have tournaments to come back to after the pandemic pause, and that first one was at Inverness, which was actually fantastic, but she wound up missing an 8-footer that would have given her a better chance against Danielle Kang, who won that tournament. And then, this time around, everything comes full circle. Superstition Mountain, where the LPGA had an event for quite a long time. Boutier makes an 8-foot putt to force a playoff with Georgia Hall, then makes birdie on the first playoff hole, par 5 18th at the club, to win the tournament. She is now the winningest French woman in the history of the LPGA. She had won at the ShopRite in New Jersey. So she's a multiple time winner now. Very exciting for her. And it was a good tournament. I mean, it was a low scoring tournament. You had Jin Young Ko, who was in there looking like she was going to win, even though she was playing ill throughout the entire course of the week. And then at the end of the day, you had a major champion in Georgia Hall get back to close to winning, which I think she's been working pretty hard at her game. And then Celine Boutier, who's been really a globetrotter the last couple of years, and gets the W. So good for them. They're leading up to their first major championship, which typically would have been this week. This has been the date for what has been the Dinosaur, the Nabisco, Craft Nabisco, the ANA Inspiration. I mean, name it what it's been over the last 20 years. But now it's the Chevron Championship. They're no longer at Mission Hills. That's where the PGA Tour Champions played this past week, taking that venue now that it's become available. And the dates become available, and the event will now move to the back half, so after the Masters. So it's no longer the LPGA's first major is the first major of all golf for the year. It's now the second major, but We'll see that in a few weeks' time. So for people who are confused about why there isn't going to be the Nine Ashore this week, that's what happened there. And leading up to the Masters, now you've got the Augusta National Women's Amateur not competing against the first major of the year for the LPGA, which had a history of inviting amateur players. And so you weren't going to get necessarily the best amateurs because you had a conflicting choice to make. I think it's all going to work out for the best in the end, but the history from Mission Hills in terms of date and course is no longer there, but at least the champions were there. So that was pretty cool. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed watching the 50 plus guys try to play the course, knowing how the LPGA played the course historically. So we don't get many opportunities like that, but we'll for the next few years. All right, that's going to do it for us today on Two at the First. Thank you so much for watching or listening to the show. We've got a new recording schedule for you. We do this in the mornings along with my thrice weekly podcast about golf betting called The Press. And we'll try to get the voice version out early in the morning. We're going to play it each day on GNN Radio. We have a new schedule, first published schedule. You can check it out at golfnewsnet.com. From 11 to 12 each morning, there will be two off the first, whether that's back-to-back episodes or the same one twice. I'm not exactly sure how we're going to work that out. But then in the afternoon from one or right afterward, at least on Mondays, there'll be The Press. And then Tuesday and Wednesday, as the shows get longer, because we build one of them each week, we'll have that in the afternoon from 1 to 2. If you're interested in becoming a Golf Newsnet member, we're actually going to set up a new package to access just the daily written content that I'm going to be doing for that. We'll set up a price for that. I think it's going to be $25 a year, and that'll include all kinds of other goodies, including some shop credit with the Pins and Needles Golf, the business I do with making golf accessories, and some other goodies. So I will give you more details about that as well. And if you listen to us via a podcast platform, please give us a 5-star review. It helps us reach more people. If you're watching on YouTube, please consider subscribing. Smash that like button. We appreciate that too. Leave a comment. Love to hear your thoughts. There was some lively discussion about our most recent show regarding the rollback of the golf ball, and we always appreciate that. All right, we will talk to you tomorrow with another edition of Two Out the First. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Thank you for watching. We will talk to you then. Have a great day, everybody.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.